Welcome to the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your legacy every day that you live. We are so excited to have two very special guests today, incredible, compassionate, visionary leaders, Miss Paula and Mr. Vic Holtz, co-founders of Fresh Start Coffee in Monroe, Michigan, as well as missionaries and, well, ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ at Monroe Vineyard Church. We're excited to talk about what they're doing in the area and for a particular group of people with their coffee house, a nonprofit cafe, which isn't just about great coffee and smooth smoothies and breakfast, but there's a mission behind it as well, and I'm excited to talk about that, employment and dignity and such. Good morning, good afternoon, and whenever you're listening to this, Mr. Vic and Miss Paula Holtz, I'm going to get it right today. Tell us more about yourselves today.
Well, I am also pastor of the Monroe Vineyard Church. We just, in April, passed our 20th anniversary church plant there in Monroe. I was originally born in Monroe, and I can give you the vision for the coffee house, but it wasn't mine. I'm just the grunt, the muscle behind it. So Paul is the one who can give you that.
Well, that's usually the way it goes. Usually it's the husband that's the rock, and then the wife that's kind of pushing but from behind ever so swiftly. But tell us, Miss Paula.
I laughingly say I get the pictures. Vic does all the work. I have the easy part. But Fresh Start Coffee House was born out of a desire to help people on the margins who are just, their dreams have been crushed for whatever reason. They haven't had the support. They've never been celebrated in their lives. And as I was looking out, our church was in a mall, and it still is, but it was a different mall. And I looked out the window, and I saw all these vacant storefronts. And I just got this picture. I know it was from the Lord. And I saw all of these brand new storefronts dedicated to and run by and owned by people, for instance, coming back into society from incarceration, or people in the recovery community, and that not just exclusively that, but anybody who's just never been able to have their dreams realized. Mm. And I thought, okay, this is impossible. It must be God.
Yes.
So, and little by little, we just talked about it and talked about it and dreamed about it and got some ideas about what some of the stores would be like. For instance, one of the stores, we're going to call it Vineyard Village. One of the stores will be a question mark store. That means you have to come in to see what it's all about.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
But there would be salons and lots of different types of stores and things that perhaps Amazon wouldn't provide.
Understood.
The coffee house is number one.
So you actually answered a question, I think, and I'm going to ask it anyway. Which started first, the ministry or the coffee house?
The church.
Okay.
The church. This was all born out of the Vineyard gotcha. Church.
So you had missions in the church that kind of led, or you just had the vision?
No, it was just a vision. It was just a picture that I had that came to me, and I'm an ordained pastor, and Rick and I've been working together in that ministry.
Wow.
And it was, yeah.
I guess let's start from the beginning, because I want to kind of, I won't say figure things out, but get our listeners to know where you came from. And I heard Vic say that he's from Monroe. Did you live your whole life in Monroe?
Not even close.
I already knew the answer to that,
I was born in Fitchburg, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
And then at 15, moved to Leroy, New York, which is the home of Jell-O.
Okay.
My big claim to fame. Went to college at the University of Rochester in New York. Mm-hmm. Eastman School of Music, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So that's probably more than you wanted to know.
No, not at all.
I'm not from Monroe, but I am very much a part of Monroe and delighted, thrilled to be.
You've been there for over 20 years?
20 years.
Wow. Wow. So did you have ministry elsewhere before you came?
Ann Arbor, Milan.
Oh, okay.
In that area, yes.
So what's been some of the ups and downs in your journey in ministry locally?
Wow, I would just say I've heard it said that being a pastor is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And I had no idea. I went to school to become an opera singer, and opera was my major at Eastman. And
so you have a singing voice.
I did, yes.
Oh, you said did.
I did. Well, at this age, not much left. But,
Yeah, and she hesitates to mention the fact that she got her scholarships for her singing through a pageant called the Miss America pageant, in which she was Miss New York.
Wow. So I'm sitting with Miss New York. I'm honored. I'm going to get your autograph.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. It's been a while.
Oh, that's amazing. So now this has led you to, I guess, the ministries of help. And we honor that. But in that mission, I don't know how to really word this, but I'm just going to say it the way that I have it. After dealing with people in the public sphere and all of what you just mentioned, which with pageants, that's very competitive. I guess I'll ask the same question again. Some of the ups and the downs and the sideways, you're dealing with people primarily based on what we have on you that have been incarcerated, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be some challenges in dealing with them, and you have to accommodate those challenges. What have been some of those challenges?
Well, I'll say this little bit and then turn it over to Vic, because he has a lion's part of the story here.
He's the muscle.
Yeah, he is, but also the inspiration. Mm. Before a certain thing happened in our family, this vision, God gave us this vision. So I'll say that the incarceration of our own daughter came after the Lord gave us this vision.
Wow.
And I'm going to let Vic take it from there.
So, well, we're a blended family. We've been married 28 and a half years now. And so between us, we have 7 children.
Wow.
21 grandchildren, and 2 going on 4 great-grandchildren. My oldest granddaughter is pregnant with twins, so she's given us 2 great-grandsons and then 2 great-granddaughters. So in all of that, both of us, before we were married, experienced issues with one or more of our children with the drug issue. And in my particular case, I have one son who passed away 3 years ago from a fentanyl overdose.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have a daughter who is in prison in Michigan. And I won't go beyond saying we don't agree she should be there, but beyond that, she's 9 and a half years there, and it actually has, we're not allowed to do anything officially in the prison, but we can do more than the average person because of the connections and contacts we have. My daughter does a Bible study there, and I send her lots of it. And we have also adopted a couple of other ladies. This is Women's Huron Valley, right off 23. And so that fell into our laps in the middle of things. And
this was prior to the coffee shop.
So it was prior than the vision, yeah. And so it was, well, actually, she started having the vision, and then this hit us. So it was a punctuation, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so that has been a challenge. So I try and see her weekly, and but we actually had one lady we invested in for about 8 years, and we were able to pick her up a couple months ago. She was released and took her home to southeast or northeast side of Detroit. So that's put some extra emphasis, and yeah, we've gotten to know a lot from the inside on this. So
I guess the system's kind of making it hard for you to interact with inmates prior to their release?
Because our daughter's there, we can't do anything formally.
Because not, it's not your child. Pastors,
gotcha. But, right. But we've sent many Bibles in, and so.
Wow. So I guess the description of a soft place to land, I think I read that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what the cafe is then for those that are actually transitioning out.
Yes.
And that means what?
Well, we want to have a place where they can experience an encouragement, mm-hmm. and a warm environment. That mm-hmm. And I don't know how you can do that without the Lord. I don't know how people can recover without Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we figured we're perfectly positioned for that.
Yes.
And so far, God has been gracious, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful, difficult experience, and we've learned more than we ever wanted to know about how difficult life can be for people who are not free as we are free. Mm-hmm. And I think we've grown in compassion, and I think that's evident at the coffee house.
So you think maybe the opportunity that you're presenting is helping somebody that's been institutionalized maybe not only experience freedom, but freedom of their minds mm-hmm. in having purpose and having an opportunity to learn a trade. I'm assuming they're being paid for their services.
Absolutely.
To restart their lives.
That's right. It's a reboot. It's not easy to get a job. We had one individual who applied at four different places, was accepted immediately, and then a background check was done. Mm. And this person was then not allowed to work.
Wow.
And now we have this person, and we're very, very blessed. It's worked beautifully.
And they're probably appreciative for the opportunity, I would assume.
I think so, yes, yeah. And beyond that, found skills and abilities that they never knew they had.
That's amazing. That's awesome, and well worth this conversation. Mm-hmm. So have there been any big financial or emotional or spiritual obstacles?
Oh, constantly.
I keep saying that because I'm formerly being in law enforcement myself. I know the type of people that you're dealing with, and all of them aren't bad. Even the bad ones aren't really bad.
Nope.
Yeah. I found that a lot of people that try to be so tough and so hard and whatnot, that's not really them.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, no. We are all recovering from something.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're giving an opportunity to recover from some serious trauma, even if it's earned.
Absolutely.
Trauma.
I think most of our problems are self-inflicted.
Yes. Yeah.
So the lady I mentioned, when Paula starts spending time with her in the prison, she made it very clear that she couldn't take advantage of us.
Yeah.
God had told us that she was worth the investment, so she was going to get it whether she wanted it or not, as far as she didn't have to take anything or force anything. Mm-hmm. It was just going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the other, concern that I would have, because I really like what I read when it comes to what you're doing, is, man, people trying to take advantage of you.
Yeah.
When I got called to ministry over 20 years ago, similar, and I was just a minister, I thought that I was going to be preaching and standing in front of people, and I had a very wise mentor and pastor, and he put me in food ministry, ministries of help. I didn't preach for almost 3 years, two and a half years, before a trial sermon. Nevertheless, I'm so glad I got that, because in the food ministry, it was multiple locations, campuses, you got to see how people would really try to take advantage of what we're giving freely out of the love and compassion of our heart. Doesn't matter. So when I'm reading what it is you're doing, I'm like, oh, it's nice, but has anybody ever tried to take advantage?
Oh, yes.
That was a quick yes.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, this is, unfortunately, we're learning a lot about the human condition. Mm-hmm. This has been a wonderful training for us in understanding what people have gone through, why people respond the way they do, why they feel entitled. And we've had to grow through that.
Mm-hmm. So if you've been involved in a recovery program, anyone that says, I've seen them that have said we have a 90% success rate, and when you really get into it, you find out that after they've lost 90% of their people, the ones that are left is 90%.
90% of them.
Oh, and so we've had a number of employees who have lasted somewhere between 1 and 2 days. Wow. And then they're just gone. And so we find that. Yeah. But then we also have the gems that do much better. And then there's a lot in between.
Even in that, I'm assuming that you're planting seeds anyhow.
Yeah.
And if you have a person for a couple of days, you can love them for a couple of days. And if they don't work out, then, you know, maybe you don't get to see the rewards from that you've placed in them by giving them the opportunity. How do you prepare? That's a good segue into how do you prepare and equip individuals for hire?
Well, let's see. The number one thing I believe is we give them an environment where they can feel safe and they can feel like we're really – well, like right now we have, we actually had to go through a situation where we had to reboot the whole staff in March. And so we have new folks in and they refer to each other as the dream team. And we're awesome. Sitting here because they can handle it. And
Oh, you're open now.
So, well, we just closed at 1:30.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But still, And so when you're in that recovery world, yeah, all things can happen. And you have to be quite forgiving. So preparing them so they're required to be disciplined and come to work on time and all the skills that – I mean, it's life skills more so than – I mean, they're most likely not going to go out and make coffee somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's the preparation that we really have.
Hmm.
So we also have something called the Lost and Found. And it is a 12-step program it's a spiritual 12-step program that we have on Wednesdays. And we have a lady from Toledo who actually had a ministry here. Hmm. And then she's now our recovery coach, and we actually refer to her as our HR department.
Ah.
But she will spend one-on-one time with the folks who come in. I mean, we're not a large operation as far as numbers go, so she can do that. So she's on staff and paid to do that. Yeah. So
you may not be large, but you're making an impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you really are.
Yes.
If I can insert here that she is involved in all of our interviews. We have extensive interviews and on many levels. And so when we do select someone, it's very intentional.
Mm.
And with everybody involved, HR, 12 steps, us as pastors.
Oh, so
they're surrounded.
You're actually interacting with other community entities as well.
Well, with this, with our HR person, recovery coach.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And we have a board of directors as well.
Awesome.
Yes. And we're connected very closely with some of the recovery houses.
Hmm.
So when we first were building out, we have in our mall a company, the flooring company. And in that flooring company, he has three recovery houses for men.
Mm-hmm.
And he donated the flooring, and then we paid his guys to put the flooring in. They did a lot of the changes in carpentry and so forth, painting and that kind of thing. And so we had them. We also have on board a lady from Paula's house, which is women's recovery house. And so, and we're still trying to get our first person to come out of there. So we don't necessarily have somebody that's still just starting out in recovery. We need to have someone who's comes a long way. So,
a little bit
but anyway, so we're connected with them,
and that is a separate from I'm Paula and she's Paula's house. So it's not Paula.
Oh, okay. Yes, right. So
awesome. And you said the mall. So this is the mall that you can see right off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's actually three of them, and we're the one closest to the city. So
okay. So it's pretty easy to find.
It is.
That's awesome. Tell us about the community events that you have there at that location.
We have lots of concerts,
mm-hmm.
and they're fundraisers,
mm-hmm.
and we've been very, very fortunate in that the people who've come and given their talent know that we, as a nonprofit, are not able to pay them,
mm-hmm.
but that, in fact, we use them,
yes.
and their goodwill and their love and their hearts and their talent to draw people in as a fundraiser so that we can stay open. Because you can't really make enough money in a little coffee house.
Yes.
To do what we do.
Yeah.
Again, it's not one of those impossible things that if God calls you to it, you know he will do it, but you don't know how you're going to do it.
But he's going to supply.
And he's going to supply, and he has. So some of those events are, we'll have a Meet the Artist Day. Mm-hmm. We have an artist who actually attends our church who is wonderful. We have a whole wall filled with her art. And other friends that we've met throughout the years who will come in and present.
A painter.
Painters, yes, artwork, yes, and jewelry.
Oh, wow.
And lots of different crafts.
Yes.
And so people who are willing to come not charge us, nor do we charge them for rent.
So this is really community.
It really is. Yeah. It really
is. And you're a nonprofit organization, but this is more than that based on your description. It's the community coming together.
It is.
To give opportunity to people to come back to the community and actually be tenable, reasonable, trained citizens again.
Yes.
Or
yes.
hopefully, in some cases, for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So the transformational testimonies and success stories of people who have come through the Fresh Start program, that those stand as a testimony for what you're doing now. Do you have some amazing testimonies that you can share without naming names, of course? Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we have a gentleman who really struggled through his recovery. And he was able to come in and help us build out the stage area and he ended up, he had his 1 year clean and sober in our, the 12-step program, Lost and Found. And he has been absolutely amazing. We have a current gentleman who, as Paula was saying, was just having a difficult time finding work anywhere. And you looked at him, and big, strong young man who just... He would get grasped up, and you could see he had a lot of talent and potential, and he is just blossoming like we can't believe it's and as soon as I saw him, he actually came to a concert a year ago. That's how we met him, and I just said to him, I have read your record. He says, as soon as people see the record, that's it. I go, I have read your record. And we're hiring you. And I just had a sense in my church, it would be called a gift of discernment. Mm-hmm. And the discernment of spirits I have on this guy is, I don't care what the record says, that's the past.
I was going to say, that sounds like a sermon. I've read your record.
Yes,
but.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
And so it's been phenomenal. And
So reentry and recovery. What you're explaining right now can be an emotionally heavy task. It really can. For you to be able to make yourself available to these people that are attempting to recover from their addiction or re-enter into society, how do you stay grounded and hopeful and healthy? Because you guys just come with smiles on your faces and you sound great. But how do you keep that going and stay healthy in doing this such emotionally intensive work?
I don't think you can do it without the Lord. Mm. I honestly don't.
So
I
your would faith. Say,
absolutely. Our faith in Jesus and our knowledge that what we are called to, he's called us to this. He will provide. Mm-hmm. I won't lie, and I've got to say there have been some rough times, and there have been days I wanted to pack it all up and say, okay, I'm done.
Yes.
I'm done. And I'm over 80, and I'm ready to retire some
days. You're what?
Yes, I'm 81 and a half.
Mm. Wow.
I am so happy to announce that.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. That was 1963, so most of our listening audience wasn't even born then. So
I wasn't.
Yeah.
So, see?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's a good answer. I think that... even for people that aren't of faith, because we have a lot of people of diverse backgrounds, it's important that you lean on something outside of yourself. And with us, of course, I'm with you. It's all about the faith. Mm-hmm. But you have to have purpose that's outside of you, I think, to sustain you and keep you motivated and whatnot. And even if you don't see the results of your actions immediately, you know, to know that you've done good, I think it's helpful.
Yes.
In this particular calling.
I had this ridiculous idea that I was going to retire.
Do what now?
Retire. And okay. We just discovered that just wasn't in the cards at all. And I actually had a friend of mine who said, "Why are you still working at your age?" And then I see him on Facebook, and he's just finished a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. And I have just helped set up a concert for people. And it's like,
I think your puzzle is better than his puzzle.
Yes, it is.
A little bit. No offense to your friend.
Yes.
Awesome. And I can relate to that. I'm much younger than you guys, but I was supposedly retired, and I'm far from it. Because there's just too many people to help. And that just keeps you going. I think we're made to keep moving.
Yeah.
Yep. Into perpetuity. Yep. That's just my opinion.
Yes.
You know, you're really blessed by being a blessing to others. How do you talk to people of faith or churches about embracing those with criminal records and addiction and histories, as you mentioned, Vic, especially in the community where the stigmas of those things run really deep, and especially even in Monroe? I mean, Monroe doesn't. There's reputations that precede Monroe for a lot of the issues. You mentioned the fentanyl earlier on in our conversation.
Yeah.
How do you help others to kind of embrace what you're doing?
Well, I guess the number one thing is just by having them see the results of the things that we're doing. And we have had, as far as I know, so maybe they haven't told us it, but many of the churches have really been behind us and for us. And so if you look at the team of people who are volunteers, they're from so many different churches. And I don't have the – being a pastor, I know that I don't have the expectation that the pastor does it, but I found some great lay leaders that come over and help us. And it's – that makes the whole difference for us. So we have Bible studies. We have book club meetings and that kind of thing that allow the people. We're made for gathering and meeting. So you could come in and have five or six different meetings happening we have sets of couches, and we have a conference room and a small, and we were actually, the facility we're in was the old Tower FM radio station.
Oh, I know where that is.
And so, we have two rooms.
So you have that facility now?
So we have two rooms that are soundproof, one of which we use for our children's ministry on Sunday. It's nice having a soundproof room for the kids.
That's funny.
So people can come there and meet and even be private in it, or just a public meeting. We have a big table that's a community table, and so it's made for meeting.
Wow. So fresh start in Monroe, Michigan, but the need is everywhere.
Yes.
Here and across the land, as many are listening to this from different areas, what advice would you give others looking to start similar nonprofits? Or maybe they've had the calling, as you did, to start and they haven't yet. What advice would you give them to start something like this?
Go for it.
Just do it.
Start. I mean, take a step. It would really help to be married to somebody like my husband who is able, but we are a great partnership. I think you need partners. I would just say go for it. Do your homework. Connect with people who started nonprofits. Get some dream. Don't be afraid to dream.
Yes.
And walk it out. It's that's about all I can say. And pray.
Write the vision.
Write the vision.
Make it plain.
That's right, yeah.
So I had heard at one time that a vision isn't really adequate unless it's impossible to do.
Yeah.
And we have been working on the impossible, and even if you do a piece of it, you're success.
Well, you're proof that it is possible.
Yes.
Have a vision.
Yes.
Start it, and now you're here. Mm-hmm. And now the community is coming together. That's the portion of this that really attracted me, that the community at large is coming together to support what you're doing, because the benefit is, at the end of the day, eternal, yes, but it's something that people can benefit from right now, right. here and now. Right. And that's, I think, the greatest blessing from the outside looking in, right. that you guys are offering. It's tangible. You know, you can see it.
I think that that's been our heart all along. We have wanted for many, many years to just, let's get rid of our petty differences, mm-hmm. and let's get together, people.
Yes.
Let's just get together.
Now to the question of the day, I think it's probably about that time. How do you see the role of the church evolving in the post-pandemic, I'll hit this first, post-pandemic world when it comes to meeting and practical needs of employment community and the recovery support? We kind of answered this question already, but post-pandemic, you think that's benefited you and what you've been doing? Because you started this before.
Yes.
Has it hurt you in any way?
So we were bad. We stayed open more than what was told.
Uh-huh.
We actually closed for 3 or 4 weeks, mm-hmm. and then everyone complained. So we got together. So I said two rules. Number one is that mm-hmm. you take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And number two is you honor boundaries other people have.
Yes.
And we never had a problem.
Yeah.
As far as post-pandemic, I really believe that we're in a time right now in which, if I may say it this way, the kingdom of God is really breaking in, and we're mm-hmm. seeing stuff all over the universities and mm-hmm. and especially the young folks. I saw it back in my day with something called the Jesus People Movement,
yes.
and that's what got me back in 1971 to us. And I believe that the impact that God wants us to have is to bring his kingdom, his love into the world mm-hmm. and be part of that. So we need to, if we're not changing the world, if we're not getting outside of our four walls. Now, in our case, we went out and tried to pray for people and scared them. So we now invite them in through a coffee house yeah. that is not a church. Mm-hmm. And we're a little bit better at doing that. So yeah. our building is used 6-7 days a week. So
mm-hmm. awesome.
I would say, if I may, that the pandemic had a very good effect in that it highlighted a hopelessness
yes.
for many, many people. Things mm-hmm. just kind of shut down, and
loneliness.
We were faced yeah. with ourselves,
yes.
and our social networks were cut back, and we were there, mm-hmm. and we had open doors, and there was an outlet for that. And I just feel like that's one of the ways that things are orchestrated on behalf of unity mm-hmm. and community, mm-hmm. that using a very, very bad situation to highlight your own weaknesses, mm-hmm. your own needs that perhaps you weren't even aware of before.
Yes.
And then you find a little place like a coffee house or a vineyard church or any church where that hope is presented back to you.
I heard someone say, outside of ministry, that forced introspection is the best introspection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you're made to have to, similar to incarceration,
yes.
made to have to look mm-hmm. at you mm-hmm. and your surroundings and your condition,
yes.
and you have no choice mm-hmm. but to do that.
Absolutely.
It kind of lends to the scripture, all things work together for the good.
Absolutely.
And it seems like you guys are doing an awesome job. You're doing a lot of good.
Thank you.
But to the last question, I'll go ahead and get to it now. I saw this one, I had to ask it. What do you think your legacy is right now, and what would you like for it to be?
I think for me, and it's a, at first, I resisted coming to Monroe. Mm. I told the pastor, our sending pastor, that even Jesus didn't do well in his hometown.
Yes.
And now that I'm there and we've been here back for 20 years, I would say that it's a call that I left Monroe. We actually went up to Ann Arbor. I believe that God is calling us to be part of a renewal of Monroe. Mm. And yes, Monroe has lots of issues. And I mean, its town hero is General Custer. It's been in all kinds of battles. And I think that this is a spiritual battle. Mm. I think Monroe is a special place, and mm. it's it's where we will probably be buried, and it's the call that we know we now have. And so my vision is that of turning Monroe around, not personally, but allowing
being
God
the impetus
to do
of,
it.
I'm hoping that when people are faced with making some kind of a life decision and a big choice, that our legacy can be one of get out of the boat. Get out the boat. I have a very dear friend from Oaks of Righteousness in Monroe who said that. She was on our board, and she said, just get out the boat. Don't, you can plan and plan and plan and plan, but take that first step. And I hope that our legacy is one that will show that it is possible to take that step and not sink. Get out of the boat and do what you can do and leave the rest to the one who called you to do it.
Yeah. Might be able to walk on water.
Amen. Yeah. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Voices of Legacy.
Thank you so much.
Pressing
your
way here, all the way from Monroe.
Yes, indeed.
Which isn't very far, but still, we're thankful that you made it down here and shared your story with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell, the third, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.